this is Mary James with Passive House Accelerator, and thanks for tuning in to this special bonus episode of the Passive House podcast recorded at the International Passive House Conference in Innsbruck, Austria. A big thank you goes out to Source 2050 for their support of this series. Hi, this is Mary James with Passive House Accelerator. Thanks for tuning in to this special bonus episode of the Passive House podcast, recorded live at the International Passive House Conference in Innsbruck, Austria. A big thank you goes out to Source 2050 for their support of the series. And I'm sitting here with three people who did a really interesting pre-conference tour, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves and tell us about the tour.
Yes, hello. I'm Andrew Mitchler from Colorado, New Mexico, the Hyperlocal Workshop, and this is my second conference and my first factory tour of Europe.
Hello, this is Bronwyn Barry. I'm an architect based in California, San Francisco. My company's name is Passive House BB, and I'm also the policy director at the Passive House Network. And I initiated this tour and then reached out to Andrew to be a co-conspirator and collaborator. So we'll tell you more about that shortly.
Great. And this is Bruce Becker. I'm an architect and actually someone who is an architect and developer. And this is my first Passive House International Conference. And I discovered it because I had a chance to stay in Andrew's amazing Passive House cabin in Colorado, and he enlisted me to join this amazing tour that we're going to talk about.
So I guess I'll start with the origination of the tour, because I had signed up to come to the conference, and I thought, well, you know, when we're flying all the way out there, it's in Austria, and there's two products that I've been really following for a while, and I'm very curious to sort of see the latest updates. And the first one is the EcoCocon straw prefab panel system, which I'm excited. I've seen it. There's a first project that's being built with it in California, and I have a couple of my own projects that I want to potentially use them for. So sort of an exploratory business related trip. And then there's another product also made, which is, so the EcoCocon panels are, there's a factory being developed right near Austria on the Austrian border in Slovakia. So I thought, like, oh, that'd be kind of an easy hop, skip, and a jump to get into Bratislava from Vienna. And then the other product, is by a company called Beck Fastening. It's wooden nails, and it's a product I first kind of learned about leading up to the 2017 Passive House Network Conference, which was hosted in California. And I met the CEO who was visiting and was just literally at first kind of released the first prototype of the Lignolok wooden nails. So I thought both of those are products that I've been following since, when did I first learn about the EcoCocon?
10 years ago.
Actually, I think it was the Innsbruck conference in 2011. I think I first heard Bjorn Kirov do a presentation of some of his projects using those panels.
Well, since we have spoken a little bit with Bjorn Kirov in the past, but I really haven't talked about the Lignoloks. So do you want to talk a little bit about your experience?
So they have a factory sort of close to the German border in Austria, outside of Salzburg, that employs several hundred people. And it's a third generation company. They occupy a couple hundred thousand square feet where they've been making traditional fastening products, nails and staples. They are the inventor of the scrail, which is a combination screw and nail. But their most recent and most sustainable product is the wooden nail. And it's actually sort of a beautiful product to hold. The idea is that the process of making steel fasteners is not the most climate-friendly process. And so the owners of that company, the Beck family, you know, made a concerted effort to come up with a more sustainable product, and have done they've done a lot of experimentation to develop both a nail that has a head and one that doesn't have a head, that can be shot with a tool that they manufacture to create cross-laminated lumber components. And it has a lot of advantages. For example, when you make something out of solid wood that doesn't have any metal fasteners, you can cut it without worry. You can do flooring with fasteners. And when you refinish that, you don't have to worry about destroying the refinishing equipment. And also, it's a beautiful product. It has qualities that metal fasteners don't have. In fact, the wooden nail has a way of fusing itself with the fibers of the wood that it gets embedded in a way that doesn't happen with metal fasteners. And it works really effectively for shear strength. Mm-hmm. That's its great strength.
So Andrew's actually been using it, right? Have you been, what's your...
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to, because I come from the other side. I have a cocoon house in construction now, and the panels were just ordered last week. And then with the nails, we've been working on a cabin, NLT cabin, Pesfas cabin. And so, Ron, when you introduced me to Christian Beck a few years ago, and then he actually sponsored a project I had in Venice, Architectural Biennale. So that was fun to learn Christian's passion. And then it got me kind of passionate about his, how to use that product. So we've been, he was kind enough to send me a gun and a bunch of nails at the time. And so we've been experimenting, and we came up with NLT structures. And the beautiful thing about NLTs is that, nail laminated timber. And in this case, it'll be a wood nail laminated timber. And then there's the wood, or they call it the CLT, lignolock, cross-laminated timber. So that CLTs would be a glueless CLT in this case. And for the NLTs, both of them require much less space to build than traditional mass timber. And the other cool thing about it is that you can cut these panels quite easily. There's no steel for the NLTs, for instance, which is, there's also dowel laminated timbers, which are really complex to build. So this is a much easier way to do that. So you can think of them as replacing dowels and some kind of traditional systems. So there's a lot of different processes to experiment with. And then now they have these little pin nails that they're coming out with pretty soon. So there's at least three nail types in different use cases.
I've watched the progression of like the first, beta, prototype wood nail, and now they eventually developed the wood nail with a head, because that was really technologically challenging. And now they're also doing they have a new shorter screw that has like three different widths, and that
it's just a finished nail.
Use type for that.
Yeah, I was playing with that one. Yeah, it's pretty intriguing.
Yeah. What was surprising, with both factories we visited, was how they both sort of combine very traditional building methods that go back centuries and centuries with, the latest robotic manufacturing. The last time I was in a factory that had a similar level of technical advancement was the Tesla factory in Fremont, where it's just filled with robots. And in fact, the straw panel factory, they will have a whole building filled with robots that will only require two employees, and they'll actually produce in 4 hours what it takes a traditional factory with 20 people to produce in a week. So it's actually quite promising to see how traditional building methods can be enhanced with new technology, and you can get a better quality product at the same time.
It's that cool, like, low-tech, high-tech combo though, right? Andrew, you were talking about that, how it's just ancient materials, like biogenic materials, but using all, like, the, as you said, like, actual smart technology. So it's just, that was fascinating for me too, because, you know, this is where we need to go. And, you know, the cutting edge innovation of the materials, using the science, you know, to engineer these wooden nails and the lamination, and then, you know, the material science behind it is really intriguing.
Yeah, I think that the concept behind the straw panel system factory is that this is something, it's a prototype that can then be decentralized. The same way that we're now looking at decentralizing power with, you know, renewable energy, bringing it closer to where it's being used. I think the concept, Bjorn's concept, is to actually have sort of smaller factories. The factory was probably only about 5,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And yet he can make, in 4 hours, he can make all the components, you know, for the structure and the insulation for a house. So by locating these factories where there is plentiful sources of straw, you can eliminate all the carbon emissions from the transportation, which is really probably the biggest factor now.
And the story is kind of the same with what really got me intrigued about the Lignolok nails was their CLT panel cross system. So it's an earthquake resilient 7-layer wood panel, which traditionally needs a massive factory with glue presses, probably like over $100 million investment to make one of these. And a new factory just up from them developed a huge table, essentially, where they can produce these robotically. And they were showing example of like a 30-foot wall that was being made. And it was a $13 million facility, still a lot of money, but still a fraction of what, for the same size panel that a $100 million factory would need for facilities, and a lot cleaner and a lot faster.
And less labor too, because you had these two robots that were grabbing the lumber, putting it exactly where it needs to be, passing it in place. And I'm sure with a wooden nail, so that
The fenestrations built into the panels, so they're customized compared to just big slabs of wood cut.
It's really exciting to see. Gives me optimism that there's a whole new technology that is supporting the green building industry, but the technology itself is super green.
And where the crossover is with Passive House that I think is most intriguing to me is, you know, they really are like optimizing both the structural and the insulation value of all of these materials. Plus, you know, for the Lignolok, it's no thermal bridging for all the fastening. And for the straw panels, you know, it's really like super reduced embodied carbon, but
it's carbon positive technically,
yeah. Exactly.
However we use that term,
and also minimizing, you know, maximizing the straw insulation value with using it in combination with the structural the strength of wood, you know, so it's, but not using that much wood, so it's just, I don't know,
he's figured out how to sort of reconstitute the straw in a way that achieves sort of the ideal density for the insulation value. It's very scientific.
It's very dense. Yeah, it's much more. It's not just like a hay bale. It's very packed, just like any traditional insulation, where you need to make lots of little air pockets.
Yeah, but not too packed, because I guess if it's too packed, then it loses.
It loses again.
So yeah. So it uses a scientific process to optimize it, and then use robots to really maintain that quality.
And we should probably mention that Bjorn took us to a lot of his projects, from the very first one to in a small neighborhood that's being built using the panels right now.
Well, it gives us hope that these technologies could be replicated in North America.
Yes.
If what you were saying about the factories being kind of...
Yeah, they're prototypes. Almost, you know, I think we're... You know, it's funny. There's some things that are very similar in Europe. I mean, the political division and the politics of decarbonization are as common here as they are in the United States. However, I think the technologies are clearly 5 or 10 years ahead of what we have access to. I think one of the challenges we have in the United States is just getting this stuff over there. We don't have to reinvent it. It's here. We have to find a way to distribute it in the United States and educate people about it.
So one of the things that was really fascinating about the Lignor Lock factory, or the Beck Fasteners factory, is we toured around the traditional fastening production areas, and they showed us that actually they're making products that we think are American products. They're just packaging. They're packaged as Bosch. What are the other, like the
Fasco,
but they're literally being manufactured in Austria and then packaged as, you know, these other brands. And I actually, in the expo at the conference here, I was also speaking to some of the integrated ventilation and heat pump, manufacturers, and effectively, that's what we should be doing. We should be collaborating. You know, the smart windows, they have, made that business structure where they do the R&D, they centralize the R&D and the production kind of development, but then they decentralize the manufacture and create regional franchises, effectively, is what you what you were referencing. And this is where we can use our network to really help set up these relationships to where we can easily do the technology and the knowledge transfer. And
very much so. I think that there's so much information here that it was new to me, but also what might be sort of understood as a common technology in one country is like, I'm just amazed by this product by Pichler that we saw in one of the houses that Bjorn took us to that has been around for a long time. They now have a product that is a combination variable refrigerant flow heat pump for making domestic hot water and space heating and cooling. And it's a ERV. That makes domestic hot water too, and has a battery, and has a solar inverter, all in one box. And so, and then it just ventilates through two holes in the wall. So these are in mass production here. They're readily available. And I think the only challenge that they have is finding someone in the U.S. to distribute it. And it really would open the door to a real quantum leap forward.
Well, there's a lot of certification involved with the UL as well. So I'd imagine, I talked to him as well, and he said like each component needs to be certified. It's not just the entire box. So
we've erected a lot of barriers in our manufacturing ecosystem that actually prevent a lot of this stuff being transferred directly to the US, which I think is unfortunate. I think there's a lot of natural and protectionist laws that, we want to support local and domestic manufacture. And I really, wish that that was the case. But I think globalization has completely transformed the world's manufacturing processes and structures, and we need to get with the times and figure out, like, how do we get these facilities built in the U.S. so that we can optimize the labor market and the transportation and even the raw materials distribution of it. And I think that's what was so intriguing about Bjorn's the EcoCocon setup, because it's very intentionally being developed for that exact business model. So.
Yeah, there are other models. So, for example, the Hotel Marcel, which my firm developed as a passive house hotel in New Haven, we had the first Mitsubishi air source heat 2O domestic hot water heat pump system, and that is now a result of a partnership between Mitsubishi and Crane, which is an established U.S. company that now has partnered with Mitsubishi. And I can imagine how maybe there's another company that could partner with Pitchler that's a U.S. company.
Yeah.
They could eventually make the same product in the United States.
And we just saw that with the HRV, the Brink systems, where, you know, we needed some more options on the market. And I remember 475 reaching out to me before they announced it, because I was complaining about lack of things. So we started like doing early installations of that before they were doing it, and just learning, like, the for our project, Bronwyn, the owner, who was a science fiction writer, he had no technical chops whatsoever, had to replace one of the motors. So he just popped it out, talking with somebody in the Netherlands about how to unplug it, pop it out, put a new one in, and he said it was no problem. So it's kind of interesting to see all those cross things happen quickly once it starts happening, but you have to really follow through. And I think what you've done, Bruce, is really like go down the path to find, like, your dryers, right? That's another interesting story.
You know, we had, I was looking at our model, because I'm presenting the numbers for Hotel Marcel's passive house scorecard today, and the electrical energy use of the resistance electric dryers is half, 50% of the target standard for energy use for the building. And so I was able to persuade Electrolux to sell us the first heat pump commercial dryers, which use only about 10% of the electricity that the conventional resistance dryers use. So I think people just have to ask. The products are out there. We don't have to invent them. We have to just get them in.
Exactly.
I think that's exactly the point that, you know, I think that was so exciting about this tour, is you just like, what? And it was great to have you, Bruce, because I, you know, this is, you weren't familiar with these products or these factory owners. So and I've been enjoying watching your brain firing on so many new fabulous cylinders, because I think just the exposure and the, you know, just seeing what's actually possible allows us to really dream a lot bigger and actually imagine other opportunities for our own regional, you know, supply chain and, you know, what we can ask for. I think that we literally don't always know that we can ask for these things and they are available. They might just not be available where we are. And so getting out into the world and seeing what other people are doing is just invaluable.
This is what the Passive House Network could do, is really, you know, cross-fertilize the ideas of and the technologies. So that's what, I mean, this is my first conference, but I can tell you it's certainly not going to be the last. There's so much to learn from this.